speaking with Mohamed Farouche, who has a wonderful release called Native Informant out on Naxos. It's nice to talk to you today. Thanks for taking out some time.
Thank you for having me.
I'm always curious, how did you know you were a composer? How did you know you wanted to create sounds?
Well, I mean, I was very young, and, you know, my first entrance into music was really through text. And I remember sitting down, I was maybe 6 years old or something, with my mother, and we were reading through a book, you know, of a children's book. And there came a point in the book where, you know, the character had to sing and had words that they were going to sing. And I read out loud, and when it came to that point, I started singing a melody of my original conception. And my mother said, "Hey, where'd you get that tune from?" And I said, "Well, it's right there." And I pointed at the book. And she said, "No, it isn't. Where did you get the tune from?" And I didn't realize. I thought, you know, as I was reading and singing, I thought that this melody would be something that, you know, everyone would, reading the book, would be hearing. But, you know, I didn't realize that I was, in fact, creating something completely new. Now, you know, my first written escapade into composition came about a year later. I actually started setting poetry to music. Poetry and text was always a very important thing, a very important entry for me into music.
Yeah. Are there particular favorites in writing, or do you actually do a little bit of, I know folks like Jennifer Higdon will actually sometimes write their own poetry.
Well, no, I do not have that sort of poetic talent. I think my main talent is musical. And so I don't write myself, but I mean, the favorites, it's just too much to name how many. You know, there's poets from all sorts of different traditions. You know, on the Native Informant album itself, you have poetry by Mahmoud Darwish, by, you know, who comes from the Arabic tradition, Arabic modern tradition. You have poets like Wayne Kustenbaum, who come from sort of a New York school, American modern tradition. I have a very strong interest in living poets. I guess, I mean, I've said a good number of dead poets, but I have a strong interest in poets that are still alive and working, and, you know, a lot of poets that I can interact with. Two of the poets on the Native Informant disc are poets that I think the settings are richer because I had a chance, David Shapiro and Wayne Kustenbaum, I had a chance to really dig in with them and ask them questions, and even ask them, you know, whether I could do this or do that. And they're both very musical poets. You know, they can both play music and are musically literate. So it was really cool to have that sort of back and forth with them.
Yeah, yeah. What sort of conversations did you have with Wayne with something like Posh? Because this is something quite tender, and I think the setting is quite beautiful.
Thank you. Wayne's known also as a cultural critic, and he wrote an essay called The Queen's Throat, which is about gay men and opera, and he plays piano really well. So when we first got together over Posh, the first conversation was I was trying to find out which poems to set. And the three poems that I set are actually not collected together. They're sort of spread out across this big volume of poetry he has called Best-Selling Jewish Porn Films. And I selected the poems to represent a sort of life cycle. And, you know, Wayne said that he thought that it represented a very nice sort of covert narrative, not an explicit narrative, but a covert narrative. So that the first song in Posh really has to do with the birth, the baby, a helpless child. The second song is an obnoxious, mischievous teenager. It's also my sort of tribute to Ned Roram, although I don't think he'll ever forgive me for it. And the third song is about, you know, an old man and retrospect, and it's much more introspective, and so it's sort of like a life cycle of three points in a human being's in a human being's life.
We're speaking with Mohammed Farouche, who has a wonderful release called Native Informant out on Naxos. He's a composer that lives in New York City and has a diverse background. I was curious, when you write a piece like this solo sonata, Native Informant, does it help to know who you're writing for? Did you have Rachel in mind in places when you were writing this music?
Absolutely. I think that the piece Native Informant, because it was commissioned by Rachel Barton Pine, was something that, you know, I also had the privilege to sort of work very closely with Rachel. And what happened with Native Informant is the first movement I started writing was the third movement, the For Egypt movement. And it was something that, as I was starting the piece in March, February, March, April, writing through the movements of 2011, we were hearing reports coming out of Cairo of police brutality and the Mubarak regime responding to the protesters and the uprising by killing hundreds of people. And of course, this was extremely disturbing news to the world's community. And so the first movement I wrote was the For Egypt movement, which is the third movement of Native Informant, and is a sort of long architectonic lamentation for the victims of the Tahrir Square uprising. And very, very far from Cairo, in an apartment on Central Park West, where Rachel was staying, I got together with her, and we read through the movement, and she read it, she sight-read it beautifully the first time, and then she played it a second time, and it was even better, and I'll never forget her initial reaction after she finished reading it the first time. It was a simple and really profound reaction. She said, "My goodness, it's so sad." And I think that there were a lot of celebratory responses to the uprising, because people were resisting oppression and rising above injustice. But on the other hand, there was this other side, which I was trying to capture in this piece, of people dying. And these weren't just, you know, political figures of, you know, convenient figures of revolution. These were someone's son, someone's daughter. And so, you know, during that movement, you can hear everything from desperation, loneliness, pain, a little bit of hope at the end, even pleading. So that was the first movement I wrote of Native Informant, and that's how I started my work with Rachel on that.
When you're writing pieces, do sometimes the titles come before the music, or is it something that is usually after? Is there, I mean, I see, you know, solo sonata, and then of course it's got this, you know, Native Informant on it. How do you deal with titles usually?
Well, that's an interesting question for any composer writing today. I mean, titles are important to me because they convey something to the audience. And for me, music is about communicating with an audience. That does not mean, you know, talking down to an audience. That means engaging an audience. And I think titles are a very, very important part of speaking to and communicating with an audience. Sometimes the titles come before, as, you know, I just finished a ballet on snapshots from the life of Anwar Sadat, the late Egyptian president who forged, you know, the peace treaty with Israel. And I think that for that, the title of the ballet was very clear. It was Sadat right from the very beginning. In other instances, like in the violin sonata, Native Informant came afterwards. As I sort of looked at the entire piece with a bird's eye view, I thought, Native Informant, that would be a good title. And you know what? It would be a good title for the album, too. So,
yeah. Oh, man. We're speaking with Mohammed Farouche, who is, I was reading these, a wonderful review that pointed out that these are all, you know, young pieces. These are all written before the age of 26. And now they're set down beautifully in a recording. That's got to be a nice way to sort of get your music out there and sort of help share your voice with people, I imagine.
Yeah, and now I'm an old man because I've, you know, I'm 27 now. So it's, I'm looking at this this piece. Well, 26 was last year, so, and I've put out other albums. You know, this is my third solo album. So, you know, I put out my opera Semedes song, which I wrote, I finished when I was 22, and started when I was 19. So that came out right before the Native Informant album. But I do think that there is something very, very special about the Native Informant album in that it represents for me not just a random collection of chamber music pieces or a recital-type CD. It represents a real narrative between all of the pieces on the album, and it speaks to the human condition in a part of the world that has been suffering and destabilized over the last 10 years, it really rocked to its foundations in the last 10 years in a way that a lot of artists have been attempting to grapple with.
Yeah, it's not a... you know, I think about Beethoven and changing the dedication to a symphony because Napoleon's called himself emperor, and there's troops marching towards Vienna. Or we think about Shostakovich in Leningrad. We're in a particular time that is plagued with war still.
I think that my most recent symphony, my fourth symphony, was just premiered at Carnegie Hall, called In the Shadow of No Towers. And that, in its reviews, drew a lot of comparisons to the end of Shostakovich's. The end of that symphony drew parallels to the end of Shostakovich's fifth symphony, the sort of bellicose, false triumphalism of the sort of nationalism that's killing us everywhere. And I thought to myself, what would be really cool in the last 30, 40 seconds of the symphony would be to have a 50-foot portrait of Dick Cheney that we could unfurl from the stage of Carnegie Hall. Of course, we couldn't manage that, but you get the idea.
Yeah, man.
I mean, many people do think that music is not, say that music can escape political reality, but if artists live in the world in which they're writing, they have to engage the political reality. And the Eroica Symphony, the Beethoven's third symphony, the one that you were just referencing, is a great example, changing the dedication from Napoleon after he declared himself emperor. But an even more profound example for me, if you want to look at Beethoven, is his fifth symphony, because that's a work in which it was a symbol for German resistance against French oppression when Napoleon invaded Vienna. And then in the Second World War of the 20th century, it became
the victory
for French resistance against German oppression. So that says something about the universality of music to speak to a lot of different human realities, not just political realities. It transcends the political into the realm of the human.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me a little bit about the last work on the disc that features the Imani Winds, and I guess it looks towards the Lebanese Civil War?
Jebel Lebanon is it literally translates as Mount Lebanon, and that was the result of a legacy commission from the Imani Winds for a wind quintet. And since my earliest visits to Lebanon and to the mountains of Lebanon and seeing the factions in that country, the immense simultaneous ideas of history and thousands of years of history absolutely boiling in this small area of land. I mean, you're talking the size of Rhode Island here. I was fascinated by it, and I was fascinated by the different musical traditions, the Armenian musical traditions, the Arabic musical traditions that I heard in Lebanon. And so I synthesized it into this narrative about the Lebanese Civil War, starting with this first movement, Relentless March to War, constantly downwards, the second movement, this interlude of called Nai, which is the Arabic word for flute, introverted, thoughtful, this third movement, a funeral march for the dead, the fourth movement being sort of a rebirth. And a lot of my pieces sort of turn towards rebirth in their final moments and towards the reinvigoration of the human spirit. And then this final movement, the very last movement, being an Arabic round dance that invokes the spirit of Lebanon's patron saint.
Well, it's a very evocative work, and they play it incredibly well, I think.
Oh, they're fine. They're great players, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You just had, you said your fourth symphony premiered at Carnegie. I know I'd seen Stephen and folks mention it on, I saw it on Facebook and places. I was going to ask what's coming up next for you? What's the ink drying on, or what are the files being saved on right now? What are you writing?
Right now on my desk is a violin concerto for Rachel Barton Pine, which is coming along beautifully. It's an extremely exciting, large-scale work, a work that I've wanted to write for a long time. And, you know, the violin has this tradition of thousands and thousands of years in the Arabic world and in Arabic music. I wanted to engage that tradition and bring it into the world of the symphony orchestra. The violin is also an instrument that, you know, has, like the guitar, has social connotations. It exists in every culture and with every sort of music, you know. So it's really incredible to be writing my first violin concerto now.
Oh, excellent. We will keep an eye out for that. And with someone like Rachel, she will spread it.
She'll nail it.
Yeah. Oh, that's so wonderful. Well, Mohammed, it's so good to speak with you, and we look forward to much, much more, and congratulations on Native Informant.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on the show.